Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. As always, thanks again to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. So we've got lots of great interviews this month, but let's get started with beer news. Cassock's Brewery installed its new canning line from Wild Goose in late July. Several of its flagship brews, including Morningwood IPA, Beavertail Blonde, and Dolly Varden Nut Brown Ale, are now available in 12-ounce cans. The Harbor Mountain Brewing Company opened in Sitka in early August. Head brewer and co-owner Zach Anderson has been brewing professionally for about 5 years. He spent time working in Oregon at Alaska Brewing Company and most recently as the head brewer at Devil's Club Brewing in Juneau. He's partnered with Sitka businessman Gary Smith, who had invested in Baranoff Island Brewing Company, Sitka's previous brewery, which went bankrupt last fall. After that brewery's collapse, they were able to purchase its assets from the city of Sitka and reopen under the new name with a new business model. For now, the new owners of Harbor Mountain are taking it slow. They're offering growler and crowler fills and working on distributing kegs to local businesses and customers. They'd love to bottle or can in the future and distribute outside of Sitka, but they also want to make sure they have a model that works. Harbor Mountain Brewing Company's tap room is now open to the public Wednesday through Friday from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., Saturdays 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., and Sundays 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. The result of the Brewers Association 2020 mid-year survey indicate that craft beer volume declined 10% in the first half of 2020 versus the same period in 2019. However, brewers seemed optimistic about the second half of the year. Based on their estimates of expected sales, the overall growth for the second half of 2020 would be 4% over the same period of 2019. Anchorage Brewing Company broke ground on August 17th on a new building. Located behind its existing building on King Street, the new space will include more storage, another cooler, a new kitchen, rooftop deck, a rooftop dedicated cool ship room, more parking, a second entrance to its tasting room, and an orchard. Construction is scheduled to be done by January, and the gardens and rooftop will be open next spring. That's it for this month's beer news. And for our first interviewee today, we've got Don Stead of Grace Ridge Brewing Company in Homer. Don, how are you today, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So how are things going? How are you weathering the COVID-19 storm down there in Homer?
Yeah, well, you know, we're down about 30% in revenue, but we're still having a decent summer. So that's nice.
Well, that's
good. We're doing well.
Mm-hmm. Good. So you're basically just filling growlers and crowlers and kegs for local establishments?
Yes, we do that. But we also opened up our outdoor seating. We do have outdoor seating right now. We put up, you know, one of those collapsible garage things. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more than a pop-up cover. And it works well. We can get 6 people in there and 6 people out front on the benches that we have outside.
Oh, good. There was a little nip in the air up here this morning. I wonder how much longer you'll be able to do that, huh?
Yeah, we're wondering as well. We're making preparations to start opening. We think after Labor Day, the inside of the tap room, and we'll just limit it to like 6 people, you know.
Okay.
So that's gonna hurt, but that's okay. You know, that's all right.
Have you got any new beers in the offing on tap now or coming soon?
Right now, our current lineup, we have apricot wheat added to it. So that's our special right now. And then we just took the tangerine IPA off, so it's no longer available. So everybody missed out on that one. Sorry. And then we just kegged our peanut butter porter. So that'll be coming up later today. So that'll be available today.
Oh, excellent. So how did you infuse the peanut butter in there? Did you use peanuts in the mash? What exactly did you do?
Yeah, we used peanut butter powder in the boil, the last 5 minutes of the boil. We had the peanut butter powder, get it mixed in there really well, shut the flame, flame out, and then basically whirlpooled and knocked out. So
cool. Well, that one sounds very interesting. I'd like to get down there to try it.
Yeah, so. It is. It's a very smooth, easy drinking porter.
Anything coming up in the near future that you can foresee? I mean, obviously you said that one's going on today. Anything in the next couple of weeks?
The next couple of weeks, we were looking to start getting ready for Thanksgiving in middle of September. So we'll be doing our double white IPA, our black pepper IPA, our cranberry rosemary beer, and probably a Scottish. Could be a Scottish with maple. I haven't quite decided, but anyway, we'll be doing a nice Scottish beer.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah.
So, any plans for the longer term future? I mean, I think the last time we talked, you were making noises about thinking about some kind of expansion. I realize the virus has kind of knocked everybody's plans into a cocked hat, but anything you're looking forward to do next year, maybe?
Well, we certainly are still looking forward to doing something next year. We've had our hopes dashed about four times this last year, trying to find a piece of property and where to go and everything else, and working with banks but we're still very hopeful. And we hope to be in a new location before May of next year, somewhere in Homer in the downtown area. But right now we still don't know. We don't know exactly,
So you kind of want to move up the hill. Is that what I'm hearing when you say downtown?
Yeah. Okay. So we want to move from the base of the Spit into the downtown area. We think it'll give us more people walking around.
Right.
Type of exposure. So we're optimistic. I don't know. If things don't happen, we're probably going to have to figure something else out here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, I know everything is kind of, betwixt and between right now in a lot of different ways for folks.
But good. Yeah.
Well, anything else you need to tell? You want to tell the listeners? You got any? I mean, I think all of our events are kind of on hold, but you got anything coming up that you guys are going to be doing or at that you want to tell our listeners? I mean, it should be new charity next month, right? What are you guys doing this month?
Yes. Yeah. Well, shoot. I don't know what charity it is next month, actually. Okay. But yeah, we do donate all of our tips this month. It is Haven House here in Homer, and we really enjoy doing that. So it's quite a thing for us. But I just want to thank everybody that's been coming this year with no tourists. Us being only down 30% is really a good year for us. So I think that I just want to say thank you very much to everyone that has come in and helped us down here in Homer. That's been terrific.
Yeah, that sounds good. If you're, like you say, if you're only down 30%, what are your hours these days, just so everybody knows when they can come by and check you out?
Yeah. Yep. Right now we are 2 to 8 every day.
2 to 8, 7 days a week. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Alrighty. Well, hey, Don, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Enjoy your sailing this weekend. I understand you're going to be out on the water, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be going out. I got a guy coming down from Anchorage to help me go out. We're going to find a place to go and tuck in over the weekend. It's supposed to get really windy this weekend.
Okay. All right.
But we're going to have a blast.
Well, enjoy, and thanks again for taking the time to talk with us. Really appreciate it.
All right, sir. Thank you.
All righty. Take care.
Bye.
In last month's feature segment, I talked about cask conditioning, a uniquely British way of conditioning beer. This month, I'd like to talk about a similar but much more common style of conditioning known as bottle conditioning. First, let's review our terminology. The Oxford Companion to Beer defines conditioning as, quote, the achievement, post-fermentation, of a particular beer's correct character of maturation and carbonation, end quote. As I discussed last month, for the classic British ales, this process occurs in the cask in the pub cellar after it has left the brewery. This cask conditioning is what makes British beers and the pubs that serve them so special. However, there are other options out there. You should know that the vast majority of beer in the world is neither cask conditioned nor bottle conditioned. Your typical beer from a large brewing conglomerate, or even from many craft breweries, has been rendered biologically inert before it leaves the production plant. This is done either by pasteurization, which uses heat to kill the yeast in the finished beer, or cold filtration, which filters all the yeast out. The resulting beer has little or no remaining living yeast and is said to be brewery conditioned, meaning that all the conditioning has happened at the brewery. This is another way of saying the beer is completely finished when it leaves the brewery. It is ready to drink and tastes as good as it ever will. Brewery-conditioned beer can never improve after leaving the brewery. It can only deteriorate over time. Why do breweries do this? Let's take a step back and review what actually happens during the process of brewing. Yeast makes beer. Before yeast is added, what you have is actually wort and contains a variety of sugars derived from grain starch, plus hops in their oils and water. Adding the fourth and final ingredient, a pitch of millions of yeast cells, turns that wort into beer. As the yeast wake up, reproduce, and live out their short but happy lives, they use the sugars in the beer to fuel their activity, and in the process, ferment those sugars into alcohol and a variety of byproducts. Once the sugar runs out, the yeast goes back to sleep and we're left with flat alcoholic beer. One of those byproducts of fermentation is carbon dioxide. During fermentation, CO2 simply escapes up and out of the fermenter into the air. However, if we take that same fermentation process and do it in a sealed space, like a bottle, the CO2 has nowhere to go and is absorbed into the solution in the beer. Thus, brewers can take finished beer, bottle it up with a small amount of easily fermentable sugar like dextrose, and let the yeast do what they do best. The beer undergoes a mini fermentation right there in the bottle, which adds a negligible amount of alcohol and, more importantly, just the right amount of trapped CO2. The result is a perfectly carbonated beer ready to be opened and enjoyed. This isn't the only way to finish beer, however. For beers that are brewery conditioned, brewers package their beer, put it under direct pressure by adding CO2 to fill the headspace, and force carbon dioxide directly into solution. The biggest advantage of this method is that it's certain. The brewer knows exactly how carbonated the beer is when it goes into the bottle. When paired with pasteurization, it also ensures that any potentially contaminating microbes are dead, increasing the beer's shelf stability. Still, bottle conditioning is pretty reliable as well. A brewer can calculate arithmetically just how much priming sugar to add to get the carbonation level they want, and yeast, it turns out, are hardy little buggers. But the real advantages in bottle conditioning come from the activity of the yeast in the bottle, not the CO2 they produce. First, in moving through their life cycle and fermenting sugar, the yeast also removes something else from their environment, oxygen. Oxygen is the real enemy of beer, accelerating staling and adding off flavors. Against this, bottle-conditioned beers have a living advantage in the bottle that will consume the small amounts of residual oxygen that may have been picked up in the packaging process or leak in past the cap or cork. Second, leaving living yeast in the bottle means that the overall flavor of the beer can continue to evolve and change in subtle ways. Beers that will be aged for some length of time can develop, with the help of live yeast, mature flavors that can't otherwise form. Even after the initial priming sugar is consumed, the yeast will keep on looking for food. It isn't so much that the yeast can't ferment, process, or consume the other things in beer, it's just that some of those things take a lot longer to consume. Bottle conditioning means that there's guaranteed to be a live culture of yeast in that beer that can keep making improvements long after the cap is on, potentially to our benefit. Lastly, yeast actually add flavor to the beer. Yeast add body, bready flavors, texture, and more to the beer you pour. Many beers even rely on those textures to make them stylistically accurate. So you see, there are distinct advantages to bottle conditioning that are not available to force carbonated beer that has had its yeast filtered out or killed through pasteurization. When it comes to drinking bottle conditioned beers, there are two quick caveats to address: pressure and digestion. First, pressure. Bottle conditioning is scientific, but that doesn't mean mistakes can't happen. If the brewer makes an error in calculating the amount of priming sugar to add to the bottle, or if an undesirable microbe gets into an unpasteurized bottle, you could end up with a gusher. That's the nickname for an overcarbonated beer that sprays you, the dog, and the walls with beer shampoo when the CO2 comes violently out of solution at opening. Or you could even have a bottle bomb. That's an overpressurized bottle that ruptures before the cap is even removed, hopefully safely within your refrigerator. While possible, I should emphasize that both of these events are very, very rare in a commercial beer world. The second possible issue comes from an excess of ingestion of live yeast. While there's no real danger per se, things can get interesting. When pouring bottle-conditioned beer, I'd recommend that you do so gently. That way, the slurry of live yeast at the bottom of the bottle stays there, or if it moves up the bottle, tends to collect near the curve of the neck of the bottle, giving you a mostly yeast-free pour of beer. If you don't do so and you consume a significant amount of yeast, you may experience a rather, let's say, energetic level of intestinal activity in the hours that follow. That's not to say you should avoid yeast entirely. Many Belgian and German styles derive a flavor benefit from giving the bottle a swirl to bring the yeast up into suspension before pouring and drinking, but maybe limit yourself to just one or two such yeasty pours per session. The Lambic basket that I covered in last month's Beer Gear segment is an excellent tool for easily limiting the amount of yeast that you pour from a bottle-conditioned beer. Now that you know what it means when you see on a beer's label that it's been bottle-conditioned, you can truly enjoy this other style of beer packaging. Up next, we've got an interview with Sam Watkins, the brewer at the brand new Valdez Brewing. Sam, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great, Bill. Thanks so much. It's a beautiful sunny day over here in Valdez.
Yeah, it's pretty nice here in the Kenai for once. So tell us a little bit about Valdez Brewing. I don't know how many of our listeners have been able to get over there and check you out. I know I haven't, much as I've been wanting to. So tell us about you a little bit about your operation.
So over here in Valdez, we've been open since November 30th. We actually have been seeing lots of people from around the state all summer, which has been very, very cool. We feel like most Alaskans are kind of getting out and exploring the state a little bit this summer while we can, and we've definitely been seeing our fair share of them. So here in Valdez, we have an oversized 7-barrel system is what I call it. Pretty much can squeeze a bit more in there, but I'm getting about 7 barrels at the end of the day. We have 10 taps, plus 2 homemade sodas. 5 of those taps are our flagship beers. We have a Pilsner, a steam beer, also known as a California Common, standard West Coast IPA, a nice roasty stout, and an Imperial Salted Chocolate Porter as our flagship beers. Those are available 99% of the time, let's be honest. And then I've got 5 rotators. Right now I've got a Berry Wheat on. I've got a New England IPA, a Blonde, and a Pale Ale. And those do rotate out. We've had some weird stuff. We did a collab with Bleeding Heart and Palmer, and we did a pomegranate and basil kettle sour. So we do like doing the weird stuff as well. And those usually show up on our five rotator taps. We also have two homemade sodas. Right now we've got ginger beer and an orange soda on.
So do you, besides growlers, do you do crowlers? Do you have any kegs around town, or are you selling exclusively out of your tap room? How are you selling your stuff?
Well, obviously this year has been a bit of a weird one, especially for starting a brewery, starting any sort of hospitality venture. So we've really been focusing on the tap room sales, and, you know, kind of just getting everything situated in the tap room. We opened up our outdoor seating, things like that. So we're definitely focusing on the in-house sales currently. But we do have some accounts actually around the state. We've got a couple taps in Fairbanks at Big Daddy's Barbecue and Midnight Mine Brewing. We've got some beer on tap out in McCarthy at the Potato, as well as a couple locations here in Valdez that are carrying our taps as well. We do offer growler fills, obviously. We have crowlers. Our crowler cooler is stocked up every Thursday. And we offer every beer that's on tap is in a crowler, ready to go for anybody who wants it.
Excellent.
So, yeah, we're pretty proud of that.
So, Sam, what's your background? How did you get into this crazy business of trying to make a living selling beer?
Yeah. My background is mostly hospitality and restaurant. And I, you know, just bounced around for a while and ended up in Seward. This was about 6 years ago. I was down in Seward, and I was just working at the brewery there, just as a bartender server. And there was an opportunity to potentially, at least apply to be the next brewer. The owner was brewing at the time, and they were acquiring another restaurant, so wanted to branch out. And so I went down to Montana, and I knew a guy that was running a brewery there, and he basically gave me a pretty much a crash course, a very intense 5-month apprenticeship, so to speak, at the brewery there. And it was right around the same size that that I've been working at all my professional life, because just the every brewery I've worked at has been right around that 7-barrel number. But I was lucky enough to learn from him down in Montana and apply at the Seward Brewing Company for the brewer position. And I lucked out with that one. And I was there for 2 years running their brewing operations and working on expanding it. And I set up a yearly collaboration with Stefan from Bleeding Heart that they're still doing down in Seward, which I think that's pretty cool personally. This opportunity here in Valdez, kind of serendipitous almost the way that I heard about it. But sent in an application and ended up getting a call back, and it all just kind of ended up working out. The day that I showed up here in Valdez, the three containers full of all of our tanks and all of our equipment showed up as well. So it was definitely a jump in the deep end, get straight to work sort of situation.
Cool. So you don't come out of a home brewing background then. You come more out of a food service hospitality background and just decided to learn how to be a brewer.
Absolutely. You know, I've always had I've always been very passionate about it. I went to college for hospitality management, and part of that program included a beer, wine, and spirits aspect. Actually homebrewed in college for that class. But other than that, very, very little home brewing, very little small scale brewing experience. Everything that I've done has always been on the big scale. But love talking to home brewers. There's a great home brewing community here in Valdez, and a little bit jealous of the home brewers, to be honest with you. You get to play around with things that, boy, just aren't feasible for me on scale. Whether it's a money thing or a processing thing or whatever. I've dabbled a little bit here and there, gone and homebrewed with other people and stuff like that. But I traveled so much. I was traveling all the time. I was, summers in Seward and then winters in Montana or back to Wales visiting family or whatever. So I could never really keep the equipment around. Yeah. I always kind of felt like I wanted to try brewing beer. And I just figured the best way to do it was just to go learn how to do it as a job and try that out.
Yeah, it's just, I'm showing my age because the people of my generation, those opportunities weren't there to learn commercially, to go and work with somebody. So many people, you kind of had to start from scratch. But yeah, that's great absolutely. That you were able to go and get that kind of 5-month apprenticeship. So I'm sure it worked really well. So at the end of this, or at this point, have you got any kind of a philosophy of beer? Is there any kind of particular stylistic choices you like to make? Are you really hooked on Belgians, or do you like Germans, or how do you come at the world of beer?
Boy, that's a difficult one. I've got the beard. I've got the styles that I'm very passionate about for sure. I tend to think that I'm more comfortable with the maltier brews than I am the hoppier brews. I'm not a huge hop head myself. I call it more of a British brewing tradition. Where we focus, kind of on the malts and just let the hops accentuate and accompany those. But at the same time, I love experimenting as well. We've got a New England IPA on tap right now, and this is the second iteration of that beer. And I just can't be much happier with it, I don't think. That's a tough question to answer, Bill. I'll be honest with you. I try to be a little eclectic and keep it interesting for everybody.
Well, it's okay. You can think about it and answer it the next time we interview you. So that's fine.
Sure.
You don't have to have an answer today. Anything happening in the future, near term? You guys got any plans? You're obviously, right now, everybody thinks up in the air because of the virus, but you're looking ahead. Have you got any thoughts about like serving food or expanding your brewing operation or anything along those lines?
We don't have any plans to expand into food or anything like that. We are definitely focused on the brewery tap room experience. We have a food truck out front. And there are other food truck options here in town, and we encourage people to bring in food. That's more than fine as well. But no, we don't have any plans to expand into food. And as far as expanding brewery operations, we're still growing into our production. The equipment that we have now will carry us through for probably 4 or 5 years, is my guess. Until we hit production capacity on the equipment that I have already.
Sam, I'll make you a bet. I bet in 2 years you're looking for more tanks. That's just based on what I've seen from around the state and new breweries open. If you're not looking for new tanks in 2 years, I'll be surprised. But we'll see in 2 years.
fair enough. Well, I hope 2 years is the number. That sounds great to me. I'm fine with that. that sounds okay, Bill. But we events coming up for sure. We are, we were asked by, Big Daddy's in Fairbanks to come up and, kind of co-host an event that they have going on, which is a barbecue competition and a, it's a barbecue competition for, high schoolers that, ends in a scholarship. So they asked us to be a part of that. So we have our first official tap takeover outside of the tap room event coming up in Fairbanks at the end of September. And then we have I'm very excited personally. I've got some barrels filled right now with all sorts of good stuff. I've got barley wine and Imperial Red, some of that Imperial Salted Chocolate Porter, and some of this copper lager that I made a little while back is sitting in wood barrels right now. Not bourbon, but whiskey barrels out of Portland. And those are going to be ready for our one-year anniversary. We're hoping to have, you know, a nice shindig with, you know, bottle releases and things like that on November 30th of this year.
Sounds like a plan. So, yeah. Well, great.
So that's definitely what I'm excited about right now.
Well, I hope one day we can, when this virus lets up, we can get you over here to the Kenai for one of our, we have a couple of pretty nice little beer festivals here, so. You haven't lived until you've poured beer outside in Soldotna in February at the Frozen River Festival.
Is that the Frozen River Fest?
That's the one. So
yeah, for sure. That I've heard that's a great time. Very excited. Would very, very much like to make it to some beer festivals. Obviously we were planning on doing that, but you know, yeah. Life gets in the way sometimes.
It does indeed.
Yep. But very, very excited to spread out and expand and bring our beers to other places in the state as soon as we possibly can, let's be honest.
Well, good. Well, we wish you every success there, Sam. And thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us. Really appreciate it. And hope to see you face-to-face sometime soon.
Absolutely, Bill. Sounds good. You too. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All righty. Thanks. Take care. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.